Excuse me. I'd like to remind all participants this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you very much. This is Chuck. Welcome to everyone for joining this call on the 13th of September. Let me quickly go through an agenda, then I'll have ask Lynn to do the inform everyone who's on the call, give us the names. So we'll start off with the roll call, as I said. There's one new recommendation I'm going to quiz you on first. Of a different nature, okay, so bear with me on that. And then we'll go through the recommendations in order, and then we'll try to briefly talk about any last-minute changes to the report for Margie's benefit and Marika's, depending on how they're working that. So let's go ahead and do the roll call. Glenn?
Hey. Chuck, it's Gisela. I'll do that for you if you don't mind.
Oh, that's fine. Gisela, good. Thank you.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone. On today's call, we have Chuck Gomes, Bertrand de la Chapelle, Marilyn Cade, Avery, Doria Konstantinos-Komaitis, Stuart Lawley, Cheryl Langdon Orr, John Nevitt, Olivier Crépin-Leblanc, Mary Wong, Alan Greenberg, Richard Tindall, Liang Wang, Evan Leibovich, Krista Papak. From staff, we have Margie Milam, Glenda Saint-Géry, Marika Konings, David Ollers, Liz Gaston, myself, Gisela Gruber-White. We have apologies today from Michele Nalon, Stefan van Gelder, and Mark Carvel. If I could please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Chuck.
Thank you very much.
It's Frank Ratch here. I think you missed me off the roll call.
What is that, Frank?
Frank March. My apologies. Frank March is on the call as well.
Oh, okay, good. Thank you very much for calling that to our attention, Frank. All right. The first thing I'd like to do very briefly, if possible, is anybody opposed to recommending that a public comment period be opened up tomorrow on this report? If anybody has a comment on that or is opposed to it, please raise your hand. Is there anyone on the call who is not in the Adobe Connect room?
Hi, this is Avery. I'm away from my computer. Can I ask one question? Shouldn't we consider this at the end when we see if we've gotten to something that we can put out for a public comment?
We can do that, Aubrey. One of the reasons I put it up front is that because we're going to be pressed for time and won't be able to have a lot of discussion on each one of the recommendations, I was going to suggest that participants in this group submit their comments in a public comment period. But we can come back to that. Thank you. All right. Thanks, Evan and Cheryl, for your input on the Adobe Connect screen. Let's go on then to the recommendation. And you can see that Marika has up there the title of the recommendations and the results of the poll that we took. Now, I fully understand the short turnaround on that and that some people didn't quite get into it. So what I'd like, I will give you opportunity if your view is you'd like it to be known, especially if it makes a difference in the results, then to speak up in this. So we will do that as we go through. The first one, well, first of all, let me review the categories and we're going to be using the ones that are in the latest version of the PDP working group that is still ongoing, and they are as follows. There are four of them, or five. I guess it's five. Full consensus, which means there's, you know, some minority opinion, strong support, but significant disagreement as well, The fourth one is no consensus, but both strong support and strong and significant opposition, and then divergence. And keep in mind, we won't be able to deliver this report on the 13th, which for some of us that's not possible. you can add any minority statement that you have later, and maybe we can handle that through the comment period or however we decide to do that. Point, jumping right in then, and again, I apologize in advance. I'm going to push us fairly hard here, so I need everyone to be brief. We're not going to have time today, whatever it is for you, to refine many details. If something quick we can probably do. My feeling is that it's important to deliver the report. I talked to one board member earlier tonight, and he was very encouraged that we're going to have a report out. I don't think if there's some things we need to communicate after tonight, I don't think that that's impossible. So let's handle that as best we can without taking a lot of time on each item. The first one may be one of the easier ones. Recommendation 1.1 is the use of the terms morality and public order. And does anyone need Margie to read that recommendation? And this will help me going through the meeting. It's okay if you want. If you need it, let's do it. If not, we'll save time and not read it. And there may be particular ones that you need read and others you don't. So just let me know. Okay? All right. You can see on the top window the table of the results. Hopefully some of you had a chance to look at those. I did earlier. For recommendation one, the use of the terms morality and public order, there was unanimous agreement in the poll. Now, I realize that at least one person, and maybe more than that, based on people I've talked to earlier tonight, didn't get their results in time to be recorded here. So let me just do this. Is there anybody on the call now who disagrees with that recommendation? Okay. Then we have full consensus on recommendation 1.1. Now, we probably should qualify on all of these that not everybody in the group would have been able to participate in this. So maybe a little preparatory statement, Margie, would be helpful in that regard. So we don't want to imply that all 50-some participants participated, but for the ones who did, it's full consensus.
Hey, Chuck, it's Margie.
Going on.
Chuck, may I ask a question? So do you want me to describe that we took a poll and that there were 20 or whatever the number was, responses in the report itself, or do you want – I thought the poll was just information for this group but not really to be reflected in the report.
I don't know. Let's take a minute or two on this. I don't know that we necessarily have to report numbers because – in the definition of the five categories, I think there should be a preparatory statement that says was determined by those who participated in our meeting on the 13th and on the list. Some people were unable to do that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's fine.
I want to leave a false impression that all 50-some people in the group express their support. At the same time, I think it's reasonable to think that we probably, even if we have them, we'd have full support on this one. Does that make sense, Margie?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Thanks for clarifying that.
Okay, good. Evan, was your hand still up from before, or did you want to jump in again?
No, that was a check mark, not a hand.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. See, yeah. Can you tell it's late for me? Thanks, Evan.
Rampant agreement, Chuck.
What was that?
City rampant agreement,
Chuck. 2, which is the change of terms, and there are several there on this one. So I hope people aren't too confused, and And but the original one that was there in terms of changing the term, the 11 out of 20 people supported the concept of that. Depending on what we do on A, B, C, D, and E, we may not even have to report on that one. But we can decide that after we look at A, B, C, D, and E. A, which was objections-based, using the term objections-based on the principles of order public, you can see had 7 people supporting it out of 20. B was public order objections using the English terms. Nobody supported that. So I think it's safe to say we could eliminate that one. C, public interest objections. 8 out of 20 supported it, so it's low support. D was objections based on general principles of international law, fairly strong support, 14 out of 20. And E was objections based on the general principles of order public or international law, 9 out of 20 supported that. First of all, let me ask any of those who did not get to submit their vote, if you would raise your hand and just tell us how you, which ones you would support in that, that would be helpful. Cheryl. Yes. Cheryl?
D.
Is Cheryl? Oh, is she? Okay. Mary, go ahead.
I supported A and in the alternative D.
Anyone still there?
I am.
I think we lost.
Yeah, I am. I don't know whether we've lost Chuck, though.
Maybe it was something I said. Oh, temporarily disconnected. He's on his way back onto the call.
Ah, very good. So it wasn't, Mary, anything you said. Don't worry.
Well, not this time, anyway.
Let's continue then.
Mary, it's Mark. Can you repeat what you said? I didn't understand. You said you preferred one, and if not one, then the other.
Yeah, I voted for A, but there was no way to indicate a preference on the poll.
Mary, I wasn't able to hear you. There was a lot of background noise.
Yeah. I said I voted for A and for D, but there wasn't a way to indicate a first and second preference on the poll. I'm not sure if we need to do that, or we should.
Probably just one, because no one else had the choice of picking two, so...
Right. No, it's just I noticed on the poll sometimes people would pick more than one, which is why I did it. But if I had to put one, it would be A, if that makes it easier.
Mary, this is John. Mary's vote is appearing now on the poll, so you can...
Okay, am I on? Hello? Hello?
Hi, Chuck.
Yes, you're on.
We can hear you, but you've got a very bad line.
Okay, do you want to call me again? Because it was fine before.
Absolutely. We'll call you again. Kelly, if you'd be so kind as to call out to Chuck again.
Yes, thank you.
Everyone, apologies for the bad line that Chuck is on. He's on his U.S. mobile in Vilnius.
Okay. For people who have not polled, did not put a vote into the poll, if you are on the call or if you're in the Adobe room, can you please indicate which of A, B, C, D, or E would be your preference? At the moment, I'm seeing Lima and Sebastian have added D without reservation, and Evan has said D is not his first choice but is acceptable. Is there any additional polling? We've heard from Mary. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I wasn't trying to address that. Chuck earlier said that maybe we don't need to report the detail ones, but only the global answer to 1.2. And I think there was some misunderstanding about what that question meant, because everybody objected to morality and public order, which implies a change. So 11 out of 20 saying some change, and everyone except one person actually suggested alternate terms. So if we're going to report the global answer, it should not just be the numbers who answered 1.2 straight. It should be a consolidation of those who answered something in 1.2.
So perhaps in the absence of addition, that you, Chuck.
Yeah, thanks, Cheryl, for picking up that. I tried to get that, to suggest that before I was disconnected, but I wasn't quick enough. So
you're back in control.
What was Mary's response?
Chuck, I also had a question because, various people voted for more than one option, and there's no way to indicate which would be a first preference. And we could leave it the way it is because of these numbers, or we could, even with the time, try and figure out what the preference was or is on the part of the people who voted for more than one option.
It would take too much time to do that. So let me try and narrow it down. I think Evan supported B, so it wasn't totally unanimous opposition, but if I heard correctly. Does anybody have any objection with eliminating option B with the extremely low support? Okay, I see some hands up. Alan, did you already talk, or you have something?
No, I was commenting on your earlier statement that maybe we should only report the 1.2 answer 11 out of 20, and that I was objecting to because everyone said they don't want morality in public order. So if we're not going to report the details, then we should report the sum, the union of all of the others, not 11 out of 20.
Yeah, I understand. I did hear that, Alan. Thank you.
Okay.
I had jumped back in while Cheryl was still leading, so
okay,
and got a much better connection. So so let's eliminate B. Now A and C receive some support, minority support. What we could do is just leave A, C, D, and E as they are. With an explanation of the levels of support. We could revert the order, or we could put them in order by the most support down. Richard.
Yeah, I think that's Richard. I think that works, Chuck. I mean, given that people perhaps didn't understand sort of preferential voting approaches to this, maybe it would be better just to say that all of those had a moderate level of support, but I'm okay with either approach.
Yeah, and now, since we're going to use the terms that the PDP work team is working on, let me take a stab at that just to facilitate it. I would say that 7 and 8 out of 20 would be divergence. Is that make sense? If anybody's on that work team and can help us there, that would be fine. Cheryl?
I am on that work team, and yes, it would be, but can I suggest approach?
Each one.
Yeah, and that would be, Chuck, if we say there is consensus on the need for change of the terminology, and then we just text that several terms were discussed by the CWG, and amongst those terms, and list them, A, C, D, and E, slightly greater support was being seen for D, but further polling would be required for a definitive answer, something along those lines.
That's all?
Yeah, yep. just to chime in, I think that there is consensus on the first line, as Cheryl was saying, that it should be considered in lieu of the term. I suggested to order the items that remain according to the number of support that they received, with maybe a note saying that when in the poll people did not support something, it could either mean that they didn't feel it was okay or that they had a strong objection, and we have no way to distinguish that. So this will clearly be one of the last things that will be finalized. At that stage in the report, we should just list them in order of support and indicate that there has been variable support and that the proposals have been ranked according to the level of support, and that's all.
Okay, I see a check mark on that one. Anybody object to that? Okay. Let's go on to the next recommendation, and that's in Category 2, the International Principles of Law, and we have a bunch of them there. The first one, 2.1, adding other treaties as examples, it was unanimous support in those who were able to get their vote in. Would anybody that didn't get their vote in vote differently, not support that? Please let us know right now. Okay, so 2.1 has a full consensus. 2.2 is to allow individual governments to file objections based on national interest. There were only 3 out of 20 that supported that recommendation. So, and Cheryl, you keep me on target in terms of what definitions we should use.
Sure.
But go ahead.
I'm just saying.
Cheryl, what would you? Go ahead, Cheryl.
I was just saying I will do, but Bertrand has his hand up now.
Oh, okay. Bertrand, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to say that I put a mark in favor of this one, not because I liked this formulation, but I had circulated on the list in the draft modification another formulation for this that actually doesn't say exactly the same thing, but refers to the use, the community thing. So if you don't mind, I'd be happy to recirculate it at one point, because this formulation, I agree, it's not appropriate. So I ticked it positively because I wanted this paragraph to be reopened, but not to indicate real support for that formulation. How can we do?
Did you want to send something to the list right now in that regard?
No. Okay.
And then once it gets around, and hopefully before we're through all of these,
yep,
we can circle back to it?
Perfect.
Okay. Let's do that. Okay. So we'll come back to recommendation 2.2. Let's go to recommendation 2.3, allowing an individual government to file notification. There was very strong support of that, as you can see, 16 out of 20. For those who didn't submit, get your vote into the poll early enough, if you would raise your hand, we'll let you do that now, if you so wish. Mary, did you want to venture your opinion on this one, or I think Evan was the other one?
No, my votes win with the majority, so I've got nothing to add on this one. Thanks.
Okay. All right. So, Cheryl, I think in the definitions that this would be, would that fall into the consensus category, in your opinion?
It's almost line ball to strong consensus without people polling, but... only because of what we had on list traffic.
So your conclusion was what?
I was suggesting that because of the list traffic, with the vote it's consensus, but with the list traffic discussion, I was thinking we could perhaps make this a strong consensus.
Well, I think we have a choice of consensus or support. It's definitely not full consensus.
No.
Each time we have full consensus, unanimous, right? And then consensus. Can you advise us, consensus or strong support with significant opposition? I'm not
heading towards strong support. Avery, you're the other one on that call. What do you think?
To unmute, I would say strong support.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm okay with that. I mean, obviously, this is fairly subjective, and I'd rather err on that side than to overstate it. Thanks to both of you in that regard. Olivier?
Thank you, Chuck. I wanted to ask a question. In 2.3, we say governments to file a notification, whilst everywhere else we always say governments to file an objection. Is this wanted? Because I was a bit confused there, whether do they file a notification or an objection?
Let's see. Can somebody help me out there? Who was it that kind of suggested this particular issue? Evan?
Well, since I put up a solution at one point that sort of had a list, I think the intention, Olivier, was that there be a distinction between a government being able to put something forth with the intention of having its national interest applied globally as an ICANN rejection of a string, and the other idea being is that a national government be allowed to register its objection, knowing that that may not lead to blocking of the string, but at least giving proper notice both to its own constituents and to the applicant that it sees the string as being against its national interest. I think the distinction was a subtle one, but a very necessary one, of whether or not the notification was an intent to block or simply a notification to the applicant and the public.
Okay, thank you. Well, we might need to make that sure, maybe.
Chuck, does that address what you is that close to what you thought was meant by that?
Yeah, I think it is, but let me see if it helps, if it answers Olivier's question.
Yeah, thank you, Chuck, and thank you, Evan. It was just to make sure that it's understood as such when we release the report. So we might need to either add a word and say, like, file a notification and in brackets, not an objection, or I don't know, something to that extent to make sure that it's not taken as a notification, as an objection.
Now, in the latest version of the draft report, I didn't have time to go down and look at all the details, so let me ask Margie. And for those who didn't look at the report at all, it has a recommendation in an annex or appendix has more detail. Question, let's write off. Is that explained better in the detail?
Chuck, it's Margie. I don't think so. If you look at the top half of the Adobe Connect room, that is the actual language for Annex 3. So you can see, if you scroll through it, what is explained.
Thank you. Now, would it be helpful if Evan sent his explanation to the list, or were you able to capture it and understand it okay?
It would be
your
useful.
Call.
It's useful if Evan could do it. If we're going to include it as additional clarification in the annex, I would need that language.
Any objections to that?
All right, I'm going to try to write something in the chat window right now as we speak.
And Evan, we want the exact words that you said. Okay, just kidding. I couldn't do it.
I can't remember what I said one sentence ago.
No. Let's go to recommendation 2.4. Not allow an individual government to file an objection based on national interest. 13 out of 20 would supported that. Does anybody else want to chime in that didn't get to before? Richard.
Yeah, I did vote, but maybe this is just a wording issue in this one, but I don't know how the applicant guidebook can stop anyone from submitting an objection, apart from saying you're not allowed to, but It seems to me that this is talking more about how that objection would be treated in terms of the standard, but the actual words which can't submit one, which doesn't seem to me to be very practical.
I think you're right on that. I don't think this is meant to say that somebody couldn't file an objection, but rather if they did, if it was based on national interest, that wouldn't be grounds for an objection. Did I say that right?
Yeah, that's the way that I understand it. It's more about how this standard might be adjusted rather than the mechanics of submitting objections.
Thank you. Alan?
I guess I'm not quite sure how 2.4 is different from the opposite of 2.2. There is some additional words. Most people voted as opposites with the exception of three or four people.
Yeah, I see your point. Does somebody see it differently?
Thank you.
Betron, go ahead.
Yeah, I think there's a fair point here. There is, in 2.2, there was this notion that we open the door for governments individually to file something in this recommendation 6 framework, whereas the other one is basically saying we strongly oppose the very notion that governments should apply within the recommendation 6 framework. So it makes sense that people are orthogonal. This is the reason why I just circulated on the list a new proposal for Recommendation 2.2, which actually said national governments are not filing objections based on national law through Recommendation 6. But if they are to do something on the basis of national law, it should be in the framework of community and things like that. So I think it goes in the direction of the discussion we've all had, which basically says a national law alone cannot be a sufficient basis for a global objection, as we're considering for Recommendation 6. And so there's no contradiction, and we should maybe remove the two and see whether we make an explicit comment saying when there's an objection on the basis of national law, it doesn't belong to this part but goes to the community.
Yeah, I think that's very well said, and that's kind of what I think we'll come to it later on using the community objection process. So I believe that's correct. Richard?
Yeah, I agree with that, too. I think we have to be clear, though, that even in the current 2.2, if we in fact find that the objection raises a substantial issue that may contravene national laws, I think we have to say what happens next. I mean, that seems to me what's missing from some of these. So, yeah, you can file, and yes, you can consider, but at the end of the day, the important thing is, well, what happens? What's used with that judgment in terms of the standard? I don't think we've addressed that problem.
Yeah, and I'm sure we're not going to address it today. John?
Yeah, thanks, Chuck. I voted against all three, essentially, because I didn't see them as exactly contradictory, as Alan mentioned, but 2.2, that last sentence, I'm sorry, 2.3, the last sentence about the counter-objection, I found confusing and or problematic in that whether it was exclusively the government's ability to protest objections or not, and that counter-objection is not well defined there. So I had some concerns on 2.3 on that, and for that reason, the other two didn't seem to work with where I was coming from. So I agree that we should try to reformulate them to some extent and come up with something that's a little clearer. Thank you.
John, you want to send us a reformulation?
Sure, happy to do that.
Good, okay. We'll watch for that, or somebody will. I'm going to stay on the Adobe Connect screen so I can manage the meeting. Mary?
Thanks, Chuck. I was just going to agree with John, and I'm glad he has to do the drafting and not me, because I was a bit confused by that as well. Although I voted yes on 2.3 in terms of agreeing with it on principle. My other comment about 2.3 is I know examples are useful, and I'm just wondering, we don't really give specific examples elsewhere in the report, or at least not that I've seen. I haven't read the whole thing that Margie circulated. And the fact that, or at least in our specific recommendations, and in this specific one, there is one specific example, and given that we know that that's going to be a potential applicant, I'm just wondering what kind of inadvertent impression it might give of either the group or the discussions if we actually had a specific example here or somewhere else when the rest of the recommendations aren't as specific.
I think Bertrand has a comment.
No, I wanted to agree with Mary. I mean, seeing any specific string in such a document is not beneficial.
Okay, yeah. I said it was just a check. So thank you. So any objection to deleting the – it looks like it's been deleted – deleting the example? I think that is a good suggestion. I'm going to try not to venture my opinion very often, but I slipped there. Okay. Thank you. So with regard to 2.4, I would say that that's a no consensus but strong support and significant
yes.
opposition. But if we reword it, and maybe what Bertrand, I think, has already sent to the list for 2.2, we might have that covered. So let's come back there in a minute. Let's go to 2.5.
Chuck, if I may, it's John, just go back to 2.3. Would folks be okay if we just deleted that last sentence?
That's interesting. So that sentence is where no consensus was reached, as described below. Instead of recommending specific changes, the recommendation 6 CWG offers its views and asks for the current language to be reassessed in light of those views. So you're suggesting just deleting the sentence?
I'm sorry, I'm on 2.3.
Oh, I was looking. I thought that was the language that was on the screen. Can we have the language for 2.3 on the screen, upper window, please?
It is there, Chuck. You just got to look at it.
Just need to scroll. I'm so.
Page. Scroll down, Chuck.
Yeah.
We know it's
okay,
late.
Okay, I was in the. Keep going. All right. I wasn't controlling both windows. My mistake. Okay, so my apologies, John, and thanks for catching me on that. There should be a counter objection allowing governments to protest objections against what would be a lawful application in their jurisdiction. Is that the sentence?
Yeah, that's the one that I found vague and somewhat overbroad and problematic.
And Margie, did you want to talk to that?
Actually, if we delete that sentence, I think it answers the question. I was trying to confirm that what you guys wanted me to do was delete the example.kh, but it would be deleted if it's last sentence.
Anybody opposed to deleting that sentence in 2.3? Now, 2.3 has 14 out of 20, so I think the correct classification for that would be no consensus but strong support. And significant opposition. Is that correct, Cheryl and
Looks like I got 16 out of 20, and with the deletion, I will change my vote, so it's 17 out of 20.
Definitely
okay. Strong support, okay? Strong support, but significant opposition.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead,
Bertrand. No, actually, sorry, I wanted to intervene on the new formulation for 2.2, so it's premature. Sorry.
Okay, now I need to get back down to where I was. So, recommendation, we'll come back to 2.2 in a minute and 2.4, but recommendation 2.5, principles of international law. Boy, it's hard to believe that we don't have full consensus on that one. Does anybody object to full consensus on 2.5. The term principles of international law instead of international law or whatever it was. I had to rip that one. Okay. Any objections to that? So full consensus on 2.5. Let's come back to 2. Yes?
Just one comment. Yeah, this is Bertrand. Just one comment. It's full support for the 2.5, but I would suggest to put it at 2.1. Because it is the first thing that is connected to the more general.
Any problems with that? Did you get that, Margie?
That makes sense.
Reordering. Okay.
Now, I believe that Bertrand has sent some wording for 2-2. Would you talk to that, please, Bertrand? And for the rest of you, check your email if you can.
Yeah, so the idea is simplify and basically kick national objections, if ever, to out of this specific part. And so it would read, should individual governments have national public interest concerns or national concerns that could be modified based on specific national laws, such objections should be submitted to community and national government objections procedure. I think I picked it from a previous formulation, and in particular that Mary had provided. So I can repeat, individual governments have national public interest concerns based on specific national laws. Such objections should be submitted through the community and national government objections procedure, so as to kick it into the other element and say, in other terms, national law is not a basis for the international objection.
Richard.
A question to Bertrand. So how do you see the community and national government objection procedure? How do you see that varying from the community objection procedure that's in DAG 4? What are the differences between that process and the existing community objection process? Thanks.
I think what we discovered in the discussion with Carol was that the community objection procedure already covers a significant portion of what the GAC in particular was concerned about when it dealt with local communities, cultural related strings, and things like that. I think I picked the expression community and national government objection in another paragraph. Somebody else had contributed that on the list, and it would mean that we would address, in the part dealing with community, what would be done in the case, if we want to consider it, in the case where national objections would be handled on the basis of something that touches the national framework, but it is not on an international basis. And maybe the paragraphs regarding notifications and so could be moved to that part. But the purpose of this thing was basically to say nationally based or objections based on national law are not in the category of international principles of law by definition. So we can reiterate or reformulate the paragraph, but the idea is to say national objections, national-based objections, are not part of the international angle. I hope it helps. It's an objective to remove the tension with 2-2 and 2-4, having one thing that kicks the problem to the other part.
Richard, does that help?
It does. Can I respond quickly?
Sure.
So a national government could submit an objection on the international principles. We're all agreed on that. They could also submit an objection based on the community standard, and I think we're all agreed on that. That's currently possible. It seems to me that what you're suggesting, though, is there's a third standard of some sort, which is a national interest, but that which is not currently adequately covered by the community standard. Is that correct?
Well, as a matter of fact, I was merely picking up thanks for asking this. I was merely picking up the formulation that was this version of the MAPO Emerging Principles. I think it was the version 2 with the edits by Chuck. And the recommendation then that was 2 was using the expression community and national government objections. So
Understood.
Okay, Richard?
It is, but I mean, I think if we're going to vote with any measure of support for this notion, and I'm not saying I vote against it, I think we owe it to ourselves as readers to define what we by a community and national objection.
Define what?
national government objection.
Define the term community and national government objection, because that's not a term that exists anywhere currently.
That's true.
Okay. How can we get that done in short order? Anybody have a suggestion there? How would you define it, Richard?
Well, to me, to me, this goes to the central question. We're talking about this third category of objection from national governments. The international principles don't work because it's not an international issue. It's more local. The community standard doesn't work because the string does not invoke a specific community. But nevertheless, there are some national law principles at work. To me, this is the part of the solution that we haven't quite worked out yet. So maybe in this report we simply say that it requires, looking at. We haven't addressed the fact that there may be some forms of national-level objection which raise national law, but we don't have a solution past that yet, because community objection is not the way to go there, nor is the global principles of law.
From that one.
Okay, Bertrand wants to comment just on that, and then Mary, you're next.
Actually, Richard, this is a very interesting point. What you make me think is that when we say it doesn't connect to a specific community, as a matter of fact, we could consider that if there is a national law, there has been a process at the national level for the whole national community that actually has decided of a specific law. And therefore, if a government says, this is contrary to my national law, it is actually contrary to the desire of the community, if we consider that national law is the expression of the community, which is the fundamental basis. So what you're pointing at is maybe an understanding of the criteria for the community. Maybe it would not be called community and national government objections. You're right. It could be community objections. And we could have to discuss whether something that is contrary to the national law can be considered as a problem for the specific community, which is the given nation, because the law of a country is the will of the community, which is the nation, if you see what I mean. And I'm thinking aloud here. So I have no problem removing national government objections in this thing, kicking it to just community. And we will discuss on the community side whether it covers everything or not.
Okay. I'll come to you in a second, Richard. Mary?
Just to follow up, actually, on those comments, and there's a couple of questions that is more for clarity of myself and hopefully as well. One is, when we talk of community and national government objections, when we say government objections, do we mean that the objections are on the basis that agree to national law? If mean, then let's just face and include Rich's comment that the community and national government objections procedure or standards may still need to be fleshed out further, but make the statement that national government objections based on the fact that the string is deemed by that government to be contrary to the national law. So that's one suggestion. Clarify that at Rich's comment. The second suggestion is, coming back to recommendations 2.2 and 2.4, would there be objections by anybody on the call to remove the terms based on national public interest concerns and simply retain the phrase, specified by the objecting government as being contrary to national law? In other words, both of these suggestions would be consistent and would clarify that national government objections are based on national law considerations. I mean, Bertrand is right that national law is based on the public interest, so to some extent, say the two things together may be confusing.
Thank you, Mary. Now, it seems to me, and I, that 2.2 and 2.4 be replaced by the statement we're working on right now. And I'm asking that now, Mary, because I think that follows what you're saying as well. Correct me if you think I'm wrong on that, but the statement that Bertrand submitted and that we're trying to fix right now, is there any disagreement? Doesn't that replace 2.2 and 2.4 if we can fix it? Anybody disagree with that? Okay, now with that, go ahead, Mary.
I don't disagree with that in principle. I'm just thinking that in terms of the language, it could still give rise to the sort of concerns that Richard talked about, as in, are there other concerns? For example, when we say public interest concerns based on national law, it isn't as narrow as saying it that the specific string is contrary to national law. It still opens up some other kind of residual category of public interest. Maybe I'm just overstating this. Although I get the concept, I would like to get a possible and just.
I think I got the gist of that. Bertrand, can you suggest a reformulation based on this discussion?
Actually, following Mary's comment for simplification and Richard's comment for not having the national objections procedure wording, I just circulated something that is shorter that says, that would say, and it's really sensitive, should individual governments have objections based on contradiction with specific national laws, such objections should be submitted through the community objection procedure, period. And I just circulated it on the list.
Richard and Mary, you want to comment on that?
Yes.
Does that help?
It does, I think. It's good. So I guess a question for Bertrand. So let's say that the string was some highly objectionable pornographic term, yet it invoked no specific group. It didn't talk about anyone. It was just an objectionable term. Mm-hmm. Let's say a national government had laws against that, but no one else did. So you're suggesting that they could invoke the community objection to that using the rationale that you used earlier, that is that they have this sort of community impact status because they've got a law that says that their community should not be subject to that. Is that the sort of rationale? Because the community objection standard requires that the string explicitly or implicitly target a specific group. Now, that group could be an entire nation of people or it could be some smaller subset, but it does require a connection between the string and that group.
You raise a valid point. The thing is that we had discussed from the community objection the notion that it was implicitly, that the string would be explicitly or implicitly targeted at that community. But we agreed also in the discussion, that's the current formulation with that. We also agreed in the discussion that if a government considers that there is a detriment to a community on its territory and there is a strong objection by this community, even if it is not targeted intentionally at that community, I mean, for instance, let's take again the beautiful "but kill Hindus" thing. The string is not targeted as a clientele for the Hindus community. It is targeted to another community of the people who hate Hindus. However, it does have a detrimental impact on a specific community within the borders of one given country. And so I think it is not exclusively for strings that are targeted at the community. It is strings that have an impact in one way or the other to the community. And the question that we have to address, and I agree it's a delicate one, but this notion that normally the national law is the expression of the will of the community. And so if the community, if the national community forbids something, it is the expression of what they want. However, in the community objection, and sorry for being long, there's no guarantee that because you file an objection, the objection will be sustained completely. So it may be one of the cases where there is a strong national objection, but whatever process that deals with the community objection says, well, it may be not allowed in one country. However, globally, it is not so broadly refused that we have to ban it from the root, and therefore this opens a back-and-forth process by which the government ultimately will block, but it will have the possibility to do what we call the notification.
So, we need to move on from this, so let me make a suggestion that we use Bertrand's last wording, but that we put a parenthetical in there that this needs more work.
Yeah.
I don't think we can do much more than that tonight. So any objections to that approach? And that would replace 2.2 and 2.4.
Hey, Chuck and Margie.
Go ahead, Margie.
can you repeat exactly what you want me to do to 2 and 2-4? Because I'm a little confused.
He emailed it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. He emailed the wording that will replace both of them, okay? It's just one sentence. And then we need to add to that a parenthetical that the CWG understands that this recommendation needs more work, more detail, more definition. More definition is probably good.
Well, hasn't been discussed.
Yeah, it hasn't been it worked fully enough.
Are we, this John, are we going to delete national government objection and caps?
Yeah, it is deleted in the last wording.
So the answer is yes, John.
Great, thank you.
Yeah. So now, real quickly, what kind of level of support, if you support where we're at on this, understanding that it still needs more definition, would you put a check mark by your name in Adobe Connect? And if you can't do that, just speak up. So in other words, we're doing a poll right now. So it's looking, so there's no support for that at all. Okay.
Chuck, I don't think everyone quite has absorbed all the words in their brain to know whether they're supporting it or not.
Okay. All right. Well, let's do this because we can't spend any more time on this one. This is one that we were unable to determine the level of support for. Okay. And it's understood that it needs more definition. Is that okay, Margie?
Yeah, that's fine. That works for me.
Good. Okay. Going on to 3, the quick look procedure. I'm having trouble with my window here. Let's get to 3. There are, 2, 3 recommendations there that have varying levels of support. My recommendation on this particular one is that we report the results and categorize them as follows. The 10 out of 20 would probably be no strong support and significant opposition. The 18 out of 20, based on what we've done before, would be consensus. And the would be no consensus, but strong support and significant opposition. Is that any disagreement with that? Did you get those, Margie?
Can you repeat it again?
So 3-1 and 3-3 would be no consensus, but strong support and significant opposition, the fourth category. And
okay. Then
3-2 would be 3-2 would be consensus.
Got it.
And note that I did not say full consensus. Going to 4, outsourcing the dispute resolution process. Olivier, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Chuck. Just one small note on 3.3. The last sentence of 3.3 reads, national law would not be a valid ground for an objection. Now, on 2.3, we have a similar sentence, but it actually says national law by itself should not provide sufficient basis for a decision to deny a TLD application. Either these two terms are not meaning the same thing, or if they are, one of them might be obsolete or too much for it.
An objection based strictly on one nation's laws is not ground for an objection for recommendation 6, right? Should we clarify it that way? Would that help?
Well, Chuck, do you mean it's not grounds for an objection or not grounds for an objection winning?
The latter.
Well,
thank you.
But it's not saying that. It's saying objection.
Yeah.
It should be the first one, you think? Okay, I don't know.
Yeah,
you know, Good question.
The goal.
Whether the experts or the board agrees with the objection or not is a different issue from whether they're allowed to object.
Okay. All right. Let's go to Bertrand.
Well, actually, it's a very minor suggestion, but we had the debate, if you recall what Frank was saying. When we use the term outsourcing, there is an ambivalence. I think what we mean is fully outsourcing, and I would suggest to add this word, like really giving the responsibility to the DRSP or whatever we call it, because outsourcing is ambivalent. We seem to imply that it could be advice or complete responsibility. So I just wanted to suggest adding this.
Okay, hold on a second. We're back on three.
I'm sorry.
You had me going there. We'll come back to that. Mary?
Thanks, Chuck. And this was going back to, I think it was Olivier's question, and I think I'm one of the guilty parties responsible for the language here. I think the understanding here was that 3.3, that the quick look procedure applies to the international law objections, and therefore, as such, if it is a national law-based objection, then under the quick look procedure, it would not be something that falls within the international law framework, and it should go somewhere else, like in the community objections. Does that help? So it's not so much the board decision, but rather under the quick look itself, if it appears that the objection is based on national law, then it should not go ahead except under the community objection procedure and not this one. I hope that helps.
Does that make sense, Olivier?
It does, and so I think Mary provided the answer here. We should say national law by itself would not be a valid ground for an objection, and then that's fine.
Okay. John,
in Richard.
Yeah, I'm not sure why a national law by itself wouldn't be grounds to pass the threshold of a quick look. You know, if you're talking about incitement or the other words we're using, promotion or any other word, you know, that in and of itself to me should be enough to get past the initial barrier, that if the government actually takes the time to object to a string and says, you know, this violates our national law, just so you know, you might want to take a better closer look at this, why wouldn't that be sufficient to just pass the quick look and let it go to the panel of experts?
Right. Evan, we'll come back to that, John.
Well, I can answer that as well as the point I was going to make. Essentially, John, if it's just one country, then it's not international law. Then it's not going through some of the most basic determination that we've got here. If it's just one country and it's something that falls within their national law, then it fails almost the primary criteria. If it's something that a single country believes in and they don't have any other countries that are going along with that, there's no point of it going on to the board or its advisors because it doesn't meet even that basic criteria.
Yeah, I think you guys are missing my point. I'm sorry. I'm seeing on the chat. Are you done, Evan? Sorry.
Well, I had my original point, but go ahead.
Okay, the point that I'm making is you don't know that if one country files an objection based on national law, you don't know if it'll go to the level of an international law problem or not. There might be, 50 other countries with the same law. Just because only one country took the step of filing the objection, what the question is whether that's enough to just pass the quick look. Remember, the quick look, that burden should be pretty high. If you're throwing it out on a quick look, should be a very high burden. And if it goes to the panel and what you're saying is right, that it's only one country and something else, then it'll lose.
But, John, we also have, and we're building in the ability for a country to be able to take something to the GAC where it would be able to find that kind of consensus.
Yeah.
Something that makes its way through the GAC would basically bypass this.
Chuck, can I get in on this one also with Alan?
I'm coming to you, Alan. Okay, go back, jump in
and,
right now.
And, okay.
Yeah. And any given country, unless it goes to the GAC or unless it goes to the United Nations or some other global body, can only file an objection on its own auspices. So if you disallow every country from filing an objection based on its own laws, you won't know that there are 75 countries who are trying to do that. I mean, the process of getting international consent and everyone to agree on something is so long that it would almost never happen. If you don't allow an individual country to object, then you'll never get multiple countries objecting.
Alan, what's wrong?
I think we're getting to some clarity here. Everything we're discussing is Recommendation 6, primarily. Recommendation 6, we agree more and more that it is about international principles of law, or whatever order we put it, principles of international law. Therefore, the case we're addressing here is you have two situations. If a government files an objection saying this is contrary to my national law, period, and this is the only reason why it should not get in the route, then it would not fly through the quick look procedure, not because it is frivolous or abusive, which are hard terms, but because it would go to the formulation we discussed earlier. The message would be this would be filed as a community type of objection because it's only on the basis of national law. However, if a country says it is contrary to my national law, and I believe that my national law in this case embodies an international principle that should be respected, then it could pass. And it would be the opportunity for other countries to say, well, actually, we do agree, and then the DRSP would say it is indeed an international law, whatever, an international law principle. You see the distinction. It's not the fact that you mentioned that it is a national law that is the only criteria. Either you mention only the national law, you mention the national law, which you believe is embodying a more general principle.
Thank you, Bertrand. Evan?
Okay. I just wanted to go back to my original point before I was responding to John, which is now responding a bit to Bertrand, and it's also about his term about the words frivolous or abusive, and I'm wondering if that is maybe a bit too highly charged for what we need to do here. It's possible for an objection to be perfectly valid within the country in which it originated, but not suitable for passing beyond the quick look. That doesn't make it frivolous or abusive. Abusive can be gaming the system, but I'm just wondering if these words here are appropriate or just inappropriately charged.
Let me throw out a question here. I'm wondering if we're gonna err one way or the other. It seems to me it would be better to err on letting an objection go through and then having a more thorough evaluation than throwing it out too early. So I guess, and I'm not going to make the decision on this because it is. But, you know, there is diversity of opinion on this, and it's valid diversity, in my opinion. But I kind of think it would be better to let one go through to the full process. They're going to have to pay for it, you know. So rather than throw it out when, in fact, there are the cases, as several people have pointed out, where it might be okay. Richard.
It's Richard. Yeah, look, I completely agree with Chuck on this. So the government goes to the length of paying for and filing an objection. I don't think it's appropriate to be calling that frivolous or abusive. It's based on national law. It doesn't change, as several people have said, it doesn't change the ultimate standard in any way that objection will be reviewed against. But I don't think it would be appropriate for this process to be rejecting national government claims as frivolous if it's purely based on their own law. I agree with Chuck. I think that needs a proper hearing.
And by the way, I think Evan has a good point. I don't think we're trying to say that kind of objection would be frivolous, but that may need to be tweaked some. But I see one. I see Cheryl's hand that she agrees as well. Is there anybody that really strongly objects to that position of, you know, if, and I'm not sure how to express it, but recommendation 3.3 right now, it might again, I would say erring on the side of letting it go through is better than inappropriately eliminating it. Does anybody strongly disagree with that? I think we maybe what we could do in 3.3 is say change it to something like this and determine whether an objection is eliminated.
Get past the quicker
person. Yeah, whether it's eliminated, there should be an evaluation of the grounds of the objection to see if they are valid. National law. Maybe we just delete the. The last sentence, national law would not be a valid ground for an objection, and leave it at that, and we could, you know, change frivolous or abusive to is rejected, okay? Does that work? Does it help? Should we leave this one as an undecided suggestion? Why don't we, not hearing any comments, I don't think we're close enough to being in agreement on this to put anything. Margie, on this one, I think we need to classify it as it needs more work, and we didn't have time to do it now.
Okay, but Chuck, what is it you want me to do with 3.3? Just leave it alone and put in it needs more work, or actually change the language of 3.3?
I don't think we're getting enough agreement to change the language,
Is there anyone who wants to keep frivolous or abusive?
Sure. What's that?
Is there anyone who wants to keep frivolous or abusive?
Well, I think that.
Carol?
I wasn't wanting to keep frivolous or abusive. I had my hand up the question. Just leave me in the line. Thanks, Chuck.
Okay. Margie?
Yeah, if I can comment, it's not, I mean, I just took this from other people's suggestions, but I think the reason frivolous or abusive is there is because that's what the standard is right now. So
it's in the language.
Yeah, so if you're saying that you don't like that language as it applies to national interest, you have to change the standard in the applicant guidebook. I think that's where that language came from.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely correct on that. And I don't think that we want to eliminate the terms frivolous or abusive totally, because we do want to eliminate those. We just don't want to call a national objection frivolous or abusive. Richard.
I dropped my hand. You said what I was going to say.
Okay. All right. Sorry about that. Should have let you say it.
I have a suggestion, if I think I understand where you're going. Instead of saying, in determining whether an objection is frivolous or abusive, you just say, in determining whether an objection passes the quick look procedure or something. You know, so you take out the word frivolous or abusive,
yeah.
But we're talking about whether it survives the quick look or not survives the quick look.
Yes.
And what about the last sentence?
Would not be, well, I don't know, that's the question we're still debating. I mean, I think you have to leave that in with a comment that needs more work.
Mr. John, I put the suggestion on the chat room, if that helps, in language.
I'm just looking at it right now, so. Interesting suggestion there, I think. Maybe a helpful suggestion by John. Hopefully everyone can see that. Does that work?
It does work. Do you want to just read it to the record for those who might be listening to the tape or transcript later? Look at the transcript. John's proposal is as follows. In determining whether an objection passes the quick look test, there should be an evaluation of the grounds all the objections to see if they are, thank you for someone moving it while I was talking, see if they are valid. National laws not based on international principles should not be a valid ground for an objection. And that makes a whole lot of sense.
Evan?
Just to carry on, though, with the point we make earlier, it may not be valid grounds for an objection, but it may be a valid ground for registering a complaint without the intention to block.
Remember, this is just under clock, though, Evan.
Yeah. So, okay. There may be a different process through which somebody registers an objection without an intention to block.
Are you suggesting a change to John's language there?
No. This can be handled in a different place. Keep going.
Okay, thanks. That's why I asked. I want to be clear, make sure I didn't miss something that you're suggesting. Any objections to that, to John's language? Okay, Richard?
Yeah, I think John's language is good, but just so we're on the same page, my understanding is that it's not up to that objection, it's not up to that national government now to sort of present the whole case why its objection is based on international law. I'm proposing that that would then, it would pass the quick look, it's not frivolous or abusive, and then it would go and be reviewed just like any other objection. And if it failed to meet the standard of international principles, then it wouldn't be successful. So I'm drawing a distinction here on what
right. Thank you. Anyone else? Now, in terms of, we need to do this very quickly. How many that are on the call, if you would not support this language, would you raise your hand right now? And I'll allow a little bit of time. I don't want to rush too much because my next conclusion is that there's at least strong support this language. I don't know, based on this last-minute exercise, whether we should call it full consensus or consensus. That may be kind of unfair. Would anybody opposed to us calling this one, as reworded by John, strong support? I don't know. Do we have any significant resistance? I guess the one problem with my suggestion is there doesn't appear to be any significant opposition to this, so maybe we should call it consensus.
If anyone objects to it, getting a consensus rating.
Okay. So, I mean, I'm a little cautious about calling it full consensus because it's just left tenant. I suggest, unless somebody corrects me, that we call it consensus on the reworded 3-3. Not seeing any hands up. Let's move back to 4. And I think, let's see, where were we at on that? I know, Bertrand, you started to talk about 4. Why don't you jump back in?
Yeah, no, it was just to mention the addition of fully outsourcing the procedure to the RSP, just to make sure that we are objecting to the notion of putting it completely in the hands of the RSP. As opposed to using advice, but it's just a suggestion.
Okay. And now, so you're suggesting that 4.1,
It's just at the beginning of 4 in the issue description.
Oh, okay.
Issue fully outsourcing the dispute resolution raises a concern that the third party may be viewed as unaccountable and so on.
Ah. Now, challenge me if I'm wrong, and I'll get to the hands in just a second. So, in other words, it seems to me that that's a fairly safe change based on what I've heard people say, but let's jump to the queue. Richard.
Yeah, so on 4.1, I think that different people have different ways.
Hold on a second, Richard. Richard, hold on a second, if you would. I'll get to you for 1. Let's talk first about Bertrand's suggestion in two paragraphs. Evan, did you want to talk about that?
I was going to talk to issue 4.
Okay. Well, we're talking about issue 4. We're talking about the first paragraph issue. And Bertrand, if I understood him correctly, Bertrand, let me let you make the suggestion again.
I don't want to waste time on this. Just to add as the first word, fully
outsourcing the dispute resolution instead of merely outsourcing. Because there was ambiguity about what we mean by outsourcing.
So, does anybody object to adding the word fully at the beginning of that sentence?
I do.
What does the word?
Who was that, please? I'm sorry, who was that?
That was Milton.
Oh, Milton, please explain.
Yeah, fully outsourcing, can Bertrand explain better what he means by putting that word in there?
It's very simple, Milton. The session we had a couple of weeks ago, Frank raised the point about outsourcing, and there was a distinction between outsourcing, meaning the DRS panel is basically responsibility for almost making a decision, or outsourcing a service which is providing advice and leaving the board with a full responsibility, which I think is what we all want. And the reason why I wanted to suggest outsourcing is that it doesn't reject the notion of having a third panel or a DRSP, but it means that putting the full responsibility on the DRSP is something that raises the concern that somebody would be accountable. And but just to make sure that we are objective to is basically notion of putting the full and entire responsibility on the DRSP. But let's not waste time on this. I mean, there's objective.
Yes. I guess the problem I have is, and it's very difficult to hear here, why are we still calling it the DRSP when we got 17 people that didn't want to?
We're coming to that.
Okay. I realize I've missed things. I'm sorry. This is a very, inconvenient time here, and I just I don't understand. Presumably we're going to have a poll again about these new recommendations if you're modifying them. And I hear you talking about calling consensus on this or that, Chuck. I don't think this call, which has probably fewer people on it than any other call we've had, is in a position to do anything like that.
You on the contrary. Cheryl here.
There is no doing to another poll. No.
Yeah.
The
result then adding anyone to the numbers.
We're getting an awful lot of background noise, so you, I think, mute your line. Let's leave the issue paragraph alone, and let's go to paragraph 4.1. And on that particular one, there was, please ignore the term DRSP for the sake of it. There was 20 out of 20 supported that. And so does anybody hands are up on 4.1, Richard?
Yes, thanks, Chuck. So I read this in different ways. I think some people read that 4.1 say that this is on the panel.
Richard, no.
Read again, Chuck.
I couldn't hear what you said.
Better now.
Chuck, sorry to disturb us, Giesler. We're going to mute Milton's line temporarily as the line is causing an echo.
Okay.
I thought I had muted it. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Milton.
Let's try again.
*6 and *6 to unmute. Thank you for your cooperation.
Okay. Now, Richard, try yours again.
Yep, no problem. It's Rich. Can you hear me now?
I don't know what. We've got an echo, and we can't hear you, Richard. Evan, would you try to speak? We'll come back to Richard if we.
Okay, I have no idea if I'm echoing. Yes, I can hear my own echo, so this is really disconcerting. I think issue 4 needs a rewrite, pure and simple. I think we're going at this totally backwards. I think we're trying to fit square pegs into round holes, and this is just... I think this is just a whole mess of hurt here, because we've agreed not to call it a DSRP, and that we're using language that infers it. I made reference in the mailing list earlier to the concept of reengineering. Why can't we simply make item 4 saying that the board has on its option the ability to call experts, either contracted or otherwise, that it is free to use to help make its determination on whether or not a string is objectionable? Why do we have to shoehorn the board into the way of getting its own expert advice? If we're agreed that we're not getting a DSRP, why do we need to even go into a whole lot of detail over how the board assembles its own expert opinion?
Thank you. We'll come back to that in a minute. Let's let other people talk. Milton?
Might still be on mute.
Sorry, it takes me a while to get the mute off. I can't follow the discussions right now. I don't think you need to hear from me right now, okay?
Okay. Mary?
Chuck, following from Evan's comment, I can try to reword 4.1. Rather than saying there should be, say something like, board may wish to appoint. My other comment was that to the extent we retain much of the language of 4.1, the last word in 4.1, instead of adopt or reject the advice of the DRSP, for now can I just suggest taking out that last word, DRSP, and replacing it with the word expert? Because I think that's what Margie and I meant.
Where would expert go?
In the last word, in the last sentence of 4.1, we talk about advice, and what I had meant, and I think that's what Margie meant as well, was that it's the experts that give advice, not the DRSP. So the word, that last word should read experts rather than DRSP.
Oh, I gotcha. Yeah, okay, just replace DRSP with expert. Mm-hmm. Now, so we have two proposals on the table. One of them was a total reformulation that Evan suggested, and then the edits that you suggested. And we have, Margie, go ahead. And we'll come back to you, Richard, see if we can get you this time.
Sure. Actually, I think Mary covered my point. When I was drafting this, I contemplated changing the word, you know, DRSP with expert or expert panel. I think that was what I was thinking. The other thing I wanted to note, though, I think Evan's point regarding whether it's required to go to an expert or voluntary to go to an expert is an interesting distinction that we haven't clarified in the document. And I think I just wanted to also point out that I think under the bylaws there is already a mechanism for the board to go to get expert advice. So I don't know if you're considering or we're considering something else other than what's already in the bylaws or, you know, and if so, we need to clarify that.
Do you want me to respond to that? Hey, if I had my way, Section 4 could be totally nuked, allowing the board to essentially do the decision with whatever advice it sees fit to assemble, contract, or whatever. Just as you said, you know, the provisions are already there for the board to assemble any kind of expert advice it wants to get. If it's contracted, fine. If it's not contracted, it's fine also. And if the board says it can do it on its own, that's fine too. I'm fine with totally getting rid of 4 and just saying this is the board's decision and it's capable of attracting any expertise that it wants, should it need to make a decision. Why should we tie the board's hands on how it makes its decision?
Well, we can't tie the board's hands, of course, but I understand your point. Richard, let's try again.
Yeah, thanks, Chuck. Is it clear now?
Yes.
Good. So, I think one of the areas where there's perhaps confusion over 4.1 is that I think some people in the group are interpreting the current language to say that the service provider must provide a specific recommendation after they've reviewed the objection, and some people are interpreting it as No, they just have to, like, weigh the pros and cons toward guidance as to the appropriate law, et cetera, but not necessarily make a specific recommendation. So I think it would be useful, if we're going to have a poll on this one, I think it would be useful to differentiate between those who believe that a recommendation is required and those who believe, no, the panel should not be making a specific recommendation, which should nevertheless just be providing some sort of general statement and background guidance on what the law says.
Richard, why not just leave that up to the board?
I'm just saying that some in the voting that we did on the poll, I think some people, when they voted, they in their minds.
No. I'm asking you, based on what you just said, why not leave all of that to the board's own discretion and not put in any wording that constrains or recommends anything?
I understand the point you made a few moments ago. I don't disagree with. I'm saying that this is what's on the table right now. I'm just talking about the existing. Let's say the board does come up with exactly what we've got in front of us here, and then we have specific recommendation.
Did you want back in, Milton? Okay, Mary.
Hi, thanks, Chuck. I just wanted to reiterate an earlier comment I made that there is a distinction between the process and actually expert advice hearing the dispute. I'm not against suggestion at all, and I totally agree with the sentiment that the board should be able to do what it wants. But, you know, the AGB has all kinds of things as about when you file, when you pay, and so on and so forth. And it's to me that if we're going to talk about a service provider at all, we should, A, make it optional for, well, or rather say something like, if there is a dispute resolution service provider or whatever we call it appointed, that it should only administer the procedural aspects. I don't know if that will make it easier for Evan and others. I'm just trying to... It seems to me that if we come up with a recommendation that doesn't address procedural issues, somebody's going to read this and say, well, then who's going to collect the forms and the fees and so forth? They're still going to try and appoint a third party or staff to do it. So it seems to me we do need to address that, and the point is to say if a DRSP or whoever appoints, they only do the procedures, and everything else is in the form of expert advice to the board.
Constantino.
Yes, thank you, Chuck. Just to respond very quickly to the point that Evan made, I would personally feel quite uncomfortable in giving away that kind of discretion on the board. Concerning the sensitivity of the issue that we are trying to cover here, I feel that we need to have a sort of a streamlined process where expert advice is given to the board, and we know that this expert advice is given. I would not feel very comfortable depending just on the discretion of the board and the bylaws for that matter. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bertrand?
Well, I'm afraid that we're going full swing in the completely opposite direction that we had before, which was going too far in the previous direction, i.e., the current DAG has a tendency to seem to put the decision as far from the board as possible. And some people, and I was among them, and I'm still among them, felt that the board was trying to distance itself as much as possible from difficult decisions by fully outsourcing it, to a DRSP so that they just say, okay, we follow the recommendation. The discussions we've had have shown that we are strongly in favor of the board making the ultimate decision. However, what we're discussing now seems to me that we're trying to bring it completely in the other direction to a situation where basically the board does all the work and all the examination, and if it wants, maybe it could think about composing a panel. I see a big danger in this, because obviously the board will not have the time nor the competence inside to deal with those issues, especially if there are many applications in that case. So having a panel or an evaluation by competent experts, however it is formed, is probably useful. The second thing is, it is probably dangerous to give the responsibility to the board to choose the panel on another basis.
Because then there could always be the accusation like, okay, you wanted to pass this string, then you chose the panel so that it goes in one direction or the other. So I think we are in a middle ground that basically should probably be based on the following, that there should be a mechanism that provides expert panels when there is an objection on the basis of Recommendation 6, so that there is information about the international principles or the principles of international law. Second, this panel will have to decide whether it does make a recommendation or not. I would personally favor the notion of making a recommendation in order not to have the wishy-washy type of thing that says, on the hand and on the other hand. But then the question is whether the board can overcome or not, and I think we have agreed that the board can overcome the recommendation. So I think we're going too far in the other direction. I respect what Evan is saying, but saying that basically because it is the ultimate decision of the board should be making all the discussion, the evaluation, and decide whether it needs a panel or so, is going too far, I believe, in the other direction than the one that the board is taking so far. So we should stay in the middle ground.
Okay. Thank you, Bertrand. John?
Thanks, Chuck. I just want to remind folks that this recommendation got 20 out of 20 support. So I'm not sure why we're mucking around with it. I guess I would, just based on the following recommendation, change to the DRSP, the expert panel. It's essentially clear the process is that there's some kind of administrator appoints an expert panel that gives advice to the board, and the board makes a decision, and we're done. So I wouldn't spend too much time with changing the words of a recommendation that has universal support.
Thank you, John. Alan.
Yeah, we talk about the board, ICANN's board being overloaded. The concept of the board holding hearings and calling for testimony and all this is done in front of the board is absolutely ludicrous. There's no doubt that there has to be some sort of external panel and organization who will do this kind of thing, but I don't believe we need to specify the details. There is still ICANN staff who are going to work at filling in all the details using methodology that is something that is implementable and reasonable. I don't think we need to specify all the details at this level. So I support what Evan is saying, not because someone doesn't need to do it, but we don't need to specify these details. Thank you.
Okay. Margie and Mary, I don't know which one of you wants to do it. Could you describe the once again the edits you suggested to Recommendation 4.1?
Chuck, this is Mary. I think the simplest one was if we keep the language as is, then the one edit that should be made is to replace that last and final word, DRSP, with the word experts. And secondly, I'm trying to find some language right now that would change the first part of Recommendation 4.1 from a there should to something that the board might wish to do in accordance with the bylaws, and I'll try and send that shortly.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll come back to that one hopefully quickly. Recommendation 4.2, there was 17 out of 20 supported that the process for REXIC objection should not be referred to as a dispute resolution process. Is there anybody that didn't get a chance to voice their opinion on this one that would like to do so now? Okay. Then it seems to me we have that's a kind of a borderline one. Aubrey and Margie, help me if you're still on. Aubrey and Cheryl, is that a consensus or a strong support?
What's the number on this one count?
It's a 4.2, Aubrey.
18 out of 21.
18.
really, at 17, 18, it depends if anyone who didn't vote on the poll or on the call. At
okay,
17, it's
the on the conservative side. Mm-hmm. I think that's it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's,
is that all right, Margie? Let's go back to 4-1. Mary, did you come up with anything there?
I'm sending part of what I'm drafting, and there's the final sentence that I did manage to cut and paste in.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to 5, and we'll come back there to that one.
Hey, Ed, sorry, Margie. I missed 4.2. What did you say it was?
For 4.2? Strong,
yeah.
Strong support.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. 5, then. We have a threshold for board decisions to reject an application based on objection. And there was 20 out of 20 for recommendation 4.1. Is there anybody that would have a different position on that? So we have full consensus on that one. I'm looking at something incorrectly here. I think I just stated, what am I doing here? I see what it's, okay. I jumped back to 4, or did I? I'm confused on my screen, what I'm seeing here. Oh, I see. All right, so I'm sorry, I went back to 4-1 because of I was on the wrong screen. So the recommendation 5-1, that we're talking about thresholds, the supermajority required for a vote against the advice of the whatever, there was very minimal support for that. So I would definitely say I'm not sure the 5 categories cover this. I mean, there was is that what you would call divergence? It's really not divergence. It's rejection. Aubrey, Cheryl, can you help me on that one?
Chuck, there's consensus on the opposite to what a vote it says.
Yeah, right, exactly. And it seems like we don't have a category for that, is what I'm thinking, Alice.
Oh.
So which category? Anybody? They're certainly not strong support or any higher.
Sorry.
Divergence. I mean, there's no...
Milton gave us the word strong support for rejection.
Well, what's that, Alan? I didn't hear you, Alan.
Milton on the chat said strong support for rejection.
I think that's correct, Milton. I guess we can send this back to the, not this report, but this in. I think there needs to be another category in the unless we just eliminate one like this. Should we eliminate it? Margie?
Yeah, that would be my suggestion. Just eliminate it if there's not, if it doesn't even qualify for divergence.
Or say there was strong support for a simple majority overturning.
Okay, Bertrand?
Well,
we also,
Bertrand? Yeah, I would suggest keeping the two formulations, because otherwise the discussions by people who have not participated in the working group will not be clear enough regarding the options that have been explored. In that case, these are really two options, and I think it has to be maintained at least for this stage,
for the rest of the community to be able to see the two options, even if there is.
Did we just lose Chuck?
Chuck just on his way back into the call.
Okay, thank you.
Cheryl, do you want to pick up while Chuck dials in?
Cheryl's on mute.
Trying to get off mute. Say again, Margie.
Oh, Cheryl, I just wanted to know if you want to pick up until Chuck gets back on.
Sorry, yes, I will. I was having issues with muting and the fact that I'm supposed to be moving to another meeting and checking out of this hotel room momentarily. So I was, having trouble pushing buttons. Okay, so at the moment we're looking at the need to keep both recommendation 5.1 and 5.2 in, so that there is discussion and clarity on the fact that both issues have been discussed. Sean, you still have your hand up. Are you speaking to this matter?
I'm back. Sorry about that. We were disconnected. I don't know when we were disconnected here. So it seems to me on 5 we have very minimal support for it, and 5.2, we have, I think it's no consensus, but strong support and a significant opposition. And if I follow Bertrand's suggestion, we would just leave those as is. Milton. Okay. Did you want to comment, Milton?
Okay. How do I sound?
Pretty
good.
Not bad.
Okay, good. So I think the problem with 5.1 is that many of us who didn't like the idea of a DRSP making a recommendation voted against 5.1 because it presumed that the DRSP would be making a recommendation which had to be overturned. And we saw that as outsourcing of the decision in a way that really made the decision in the hands of the DRSP and took it out of the hands of the board and required the board to go to a great lengths to overturn its decision. I'm arguing against here the view that 5.1 means that we're supporting a simple majority to kill a TLD. I think the issue is whether those kinds of cloud-eating factors also entered into the vote on 5.2. So I would just like people to express an opinion. If the board, it seems we accept the idea that the board should make the decision. Now, do we want the board to make a decision to reject a new TLD application on a Rec 6 objection by a supermajority or not? I would like to have a very clear expression on that. I'm going to mute myself.
Well, we're dealing with that particular and another item. So not sure why we would do it now.
I'm having trouble muting myself. Can you still hear me?
Yes.
This phone is really clunky. You wouldn't believe it. One more try.
You've muted yourself. Thank you, Milton.
Okay. All right. Mary, you're next.
Thanks. Same suggestion as before for 5.1. Instead of advice of DRSP, it would be advice of experts. And I'm looking at the emerging principles document as well, where it says advice of the DRSP. I would assume that that means advice of the experts it consults.
Is the word advice okay instead of recommendation?
I've been using the word advice and expert advice. I think what I'm trying to get at here in 5.1 and also in 4.1 is that it is the experts that give advice and not the DRSP, so we should make that clear.
Okay. Are there any objections to that change?
I think we're tripling the whole thing. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
I'm not agreeing with those anymore, so.
Any objections to using the expert advice instead of advice of DRSP? And that would be consistent then with four two? You want to go ahead, Bertrand?
Well, I was a little uneasy with the modification of 4.1. I think expert is not enough. Expert panel would be probably the right balance. I think, as I said before, having the board just decide on its own to establish a panel of experts is leaving too much responsibility without any counterbalancing. But I must confess that I'm now getting completely unable to really contribute to the discussion at that stage. I mean, I think it's too late.
And I think we're almost a half hour over our call, which makes it, and we're in a week where it's very difficult to schedule more calls for some of us. I think about all we can do right now is to see if there's any time. I mean, it may even be unrealistic. Any time, we obviously can't reasonably make our goal of getting a report in today. So let me request that we do a doodle for the next few days to see if there's I don't look forward to, never mind, I won't make that comment. Let's do a doodle poll on the next 2 days and see if there's any time we can continue this discussion. I don't, unless somebody else has another suggestion, and I welcome other suggestions. Bertrand?
Yeah, actually, I'm thinking that we had this very tight deadline, which was actually very good because it forced us to really nail down a certain number of topics. The fact that we haven't completely finalized something not only is not a problem, but in any case, we need to consult the different constituencies, and this is the point I wanted to make at first. The only reason why we put this very tight deadline was actually to get for the board retreat. I think it would be natural that there will be an interaction between the board and this group in one way or the other, and it makes sense that the recommendations that we are forwarding are actually food for further discussion, because they're not completely finalized. So I personally would have no problem seeing the document in its current state with the cleaning that we did today, be forwarded to the board with a clear interaction maybe with the three chairs on one conference call before the meeting of the board to explain what is the status of this document and that it is actually something that is for further discussion.
So let me see if I understand that correctly. So are you suggesting then that we make the changes that we discussed about so far in this meeting, go ahead and submit the report with a comment at our breaking point here, probably around 4, that the group has not had time to finalize positions on the following and will provide additional feedback as possible. And then if we did that, I would suggest that all of the places where we have a draft position that says diversity or whatever, that we put a TBD to be decided or whatever we want there. So we deliver something to the board to see where we're at, and that we try in the meantime, before the actual board retreat, keep in mind we are trying to meet an 11-day advance notification to the board. Is that correct, Bertrand? Did I get that correctly?
Yeah, mostly it's a work in progress. We are not finished, and there was no likelihood. I think we have tremendously progressed, I mean, honestly. So I would see no shame in sharing this with the board. There will be board members that hear this, an interaction to explain what is the status, get very interesting feedback, potentially.
Okay, I see a hand up. Milton?
Yes, I would support Bertrand's proposal, but only if for the rest of the recommendations we simply report the poll results and classify them as appropriate according to, you know, some cases it's pretty obvious we have almost complete consensus or strong support for things, and in other cases we don't. In other words, we have the initial poll results, and we can forward this report with those without rediscussing them, even though we can tell them that we didn't get through as much as we wanted to.
Interesting idea, Milton. I think it's worth some consideration. Now, are you suggesting that we actually show the numbers, like 4 out of 20 or 12 out of 20? Or I'm not objecting to that. I'm just clarifying.
Is.
Go ahead, Cheryl.
Margie had a hand up first.
Okay, Margie, you're first.
Sure, yeah, I do have a problem with that recommendation in that...
You have 60 seconds.
Oh, shoot. Can you hear me okay? Yeah, keep going.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay, sorry, I thought I was getting cut off. Because I sent out the report and I really have gotten no substantive comment on the content, and I really do feel uncomfortable with issuing a report that the group hasn't really fully considered despite, you know, I mean, obviously we've done a lot of work and we've worked on the recommendations, but there's a lot of other stuff in the report that hasn't really gotten the attention of this group yet. So I do feel a bit uncomfortable with just releasing something today that is just basically my work and not, you know, not reflecting the views of the group.
Okay. What if we gave 24 hours for people to comment on the not the recommendation, just the other parts of the report? I did find a couple things today. If we had time, and I was naively hoping that we might, I was going to bring those up at the end of this call. I certainly could submit my comments relatively easily on that. Cheryl.
Thanks, Chuck. And I'm hoping Frank will come in and support on this as well. I think going online, which is why I put my hand up, till I don't know, pick a number, but you know, the close of the 13th somewhere in the world today, perhaps where the majority of you are, would be a very good idea. And then at that point, I'm happy to continue with a line in the sand that says substantive discussion and text development has gone up until this point, which is somewhere around 4. Beyond that, you will find indicative poll results and work of the CWG continues on this matter. We get perhaps a small pre-explanatory note from the three co-chairs as a cover note. We say, here is a placeholder with considerable work done and more to follow, and we put it in on the 11-day advance on that basis. Then any additional work that we do get done, you know, they know that it's coming, it's got a place in the agenda, and honestly, do we really think they're going to read every single word before it's ready to come up on the agenda anyway?
So, Cheryl, let me make sure I'm clear on what you're suggesting. It sounds like you're suggesting essentially following Milton's suggestion with the explanatory note from the co-chairs. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay.
And
Margie has a concern about some general elements of the report, excluding the recommendations. How do you think we should deal with that?
I understand Margie's concern, and what I'm saying is, with the opportunity for the rest of the work group, you've indicated you've got information to bring in, for the rest of the work group to put in, whether they're on this call or not, further comment on any part, knowing that we are going to be making the discussed text changes up until and including 4. We will be reporting poll results only for the rest. We are then encouraged to put their commentary in by close of the 13th, somewhere in the world, as late as possible in the world, today, should alleviate some of Margie's concerns, because opportunity for input has been done. And, you know, we are, of course, you know, working at ridiculously short schedules.
Okay, so if I understand, I'm sorry, I somehow disconnected myself from the Adobe Connect, so I'll look at Bertrand's screen to see if anybody's hands come up. Thanks, Bertrand. So go ahead. Now, to submit it with the 11-day advance, it means today.
Yep, that's right.
Okay, so you and Heather and I would have to draft a message right now. Okay.
Well, it's a placeholder. It's the term snapshot is being used in the Adobe room, and I think that's fine. Dear Diane, please pass this on to the board. It is a current snapshot of the slightly more substantive and completed document that will be in your hands prior to the board retreat. Da-dum.
Okay. Thank you. By the way, Margie, just to respond to your thing, actually, I did go through the latest changes in your document. I think it's not in bad shape. Things I was going to comment on were fairly easy. So I don't think there's a huge risk in doing what both Milton and Cheryl are advocating. But let's go to John.
Yeah, I guess I would say the same thing, that we should send a snapshot with the 11-day window, but we still probably have another week or 8-9 days that we could finalize a good initial report, and I think we should work towards that. I think we made some progress on this call, for example, on getting more consensus. When you had 12, 13 with a little word change here or there, we got up to 17 or 18 perhaps. We should continue that work over the next week and then get a cleaner report to them at least 3 days prior to the retreat.
Yep.
Thank you, John. Margie.
The one thing, though, is, you know, there's a lot of things you've asked for today, and that's going to take me hours. I mean, I know it doesn't sound like a lot on the call, but it takes me a while to think about it, get it right, and, you know, and make sure I'm consistent throughout. So, you know, even just doing what we've done today is going to take some time. I don't know if I'll be able to get it done today. I mean, I'll try, but I don't know.
I think all we can ask, Margie, is to make the best effort within reason that you can, and if we're a few hours or so late, we're a few hours or so late, I don't think anybody's going to jump up and scream. I actually think, from what I'm hearing from the board members I've talked to, that they're quite pleased with the work that's going on, and I find it very hard to believe that they won't have some tolerance in that regard. Alan.
Yeah, I'll follow on to what you just said. Let's be realistic. All board members are not going to read all 300 or 400 pages that they get tomorrow morning.
Exactly.
They asked for this. They want a reasoned response from this group so that when they finally publish the applicant guidebook, there aren't a whole bunch of objections from the GAC and from a lot of other people. So they not only want an answer, but they want an answer which is going to be acceptable. If they're not willing to give us some leeway and read something in the last couple of days or have some modifications to it prior to the end of discussion, then we're dealing with the wrong people. They're the ones that want this answer, and they need it right because they can't afford to have it wrong. Thank you.
So, Alan, you're supporting going ahead as we're talking about, and if it means can't get it out tomorrow, that's okay?
I'm saying if we can send something out tomorrow, let's get it out to them. If if Diane has to send out a separate mailing for this 4 days later, then so be it. And if we send something out now and want to modify it a week later, I think all of that is reasonable. If anyone wants to reject it because we're late, I don't care.
Thanks, Alan. any strong objections to that? Yeah, then let's do that, and let's also I would like to do a doodle poll for the rest of the week. Try and there's a lot of us that are going to be tied up in meetings the rest of the week, but maybe we can find some times keeping that in mind that might work. And if that doesn't, we'll have to go to early next week and deal with that. So let's take that approach. Thanks again. You know, I know this is, if any of you are as tired as I am, it's been difficult, but it's still been productive, as several of you pointed out. So I thank you for that. Margie?
Chuck? Yeah, sorry to interrupt. So what did we agree, that it could go out tomorrow? Is that what we're saying? I'm just trying to make sure I understood what our last agreement was.
Let's get it out tomorrow. It's possible tomorrow.
Margie, Cheryl here. Let's the changes you can wrought by tomorrow done and send it by tomorrow. What I would suggest is that on behalf of Heather, Frank, Chuck and myself, you pen a small Dear Diane, following has happened, meeting has instructed me to the following. They want to run their comments to the close of today. Therefore, please put a placeholder for the snapshot report that will be forthcoming on the morrow, recognising that it will be not quite the 11 days, but, you know, blah, blah, blah.
I think a caveat that it may change a week from now.
Well, that'll be in our cover notes, yeah.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. I can do that.
I just don't want to explode. You know, we've just got to do the best we can.
Thank you, Cheryl, for that good suggestion. Thank you, Margie, for your work. Thank you, everyone, for hanging in there for so long and with all your patience. Let's see what happens on the doodle poll, and we'll try and pick this up so that before the board retreat actually happens, we'll maybe be able to add a little bit more. One question, are we going to follow Milton's suggestion and show the results of the poll? I'm assuming we are. Is anybody object to that?
I think it's a good idea, particularly for the bits that we haven't fully discussed and fleshed out yet.
Yeah. The one thing, Margie, and hopefully you caught this before, but in the places where you have in parentheses the level of consensus, let's put all those TBDs just so that there's no confusion in that regard for the ones that are remaining, including the areas of support.
Chuck, one comment, if I may, it's John. If we changed any of the language of some of the recommendations and we could do a quick poll to get more accurate reporting, I would support that, like we did with the one of the ones that just came out.
Yep.
I'm not sure I understand what you're suggesting, John.
I'm saying if we change the language of any of the recommendations, we should do a further doodle poll, or whatever we're calling it, like dot two, so we could have accurate reporting of the level of support.
If people can turn it around quickly, that probably works. Is that doable, Margie and Marika?
I have to ask Marika because she's been doing it. Marika?
It doesn't take too long to set up, but we need the reference language, basically.
And I think, Margie, you have that, right?
Yeah, it'll take me a bit of time, but I mean, like by early tomorrow morning, I could have it out.
So we may be first of the day on Wednesday, I think, before we actually get it delivered. But I think we can live with that. So let's go that route. Okay. Any other questions? Thanks.
Thank you.
And I'll talk to you again, I'm sure.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks.